On July 13th of this year, I was watching the Letterman show, and I was really looking forward to that night's show because he was going to have Alan Zweibel on as a guest. And I've known Zweibel's work since he was one of the original writers on Saturday Night Live in 1975. Since then, he has gone on to work on a lot of other shows that I really liked, including It's Gary Shandling's Show and Curb Your Enthusiasm. And he wrote a terrific book about his friendship with Gilda Radner called Bunny Bunny. And on that night, on the Letterman show, he was doing a reading from his most recent work, a novel called The Other Shulman. And it was so funny that I went out and got the book immediately. I mean, if the idea of being on that show was to sell books, I can tell you he sold at least one, and it was very effective. And I said, we got to get Alan on the show, and I've got the book in front of me here, and Alan's at the other end of this phone line. Hi, Alan. How are you?
How you doing?
I'm doing great.
So you were the one who bought the book.
Huh? I was the one. I was the one who put you onto the top 10,000 on Amazon. Congratulations.
Well, you know something? It was amazing. By the way, I'm here at your mother-in-law's place in Hartford.
Yeah?
We're moving all the clocks back an hour.
Good. So, Thank you.
Yeah, we're up to the second floor right now.
I appreciate that. I'll take any help I can get.
No, I'm here to help. No, as far as the Letterman shot was concerned, that morning before it aired on Amazon, the book was ranked something like 190,000th or something like that.
Yeah.
And the next morning after Letterman aired, it was number 57.
Yeah.
It was just unbelievable.
Well, I think that says a lot about both the appeal of being on the Letterman show, but also your performance that night was very, very funny. And you picked a perfect section to read. And, of course, I played that segment from The Boxer by Simon and Garfunkel.
Because
it's so much a part of that part of the story of Shulman. Before we actually talk about the book, I want to talk about that appearance because I can't recall for a long, long time, A, authors getting that much access to a late-night television show, and B, an author doing a reading on The Letterman Show or The Leno Show or any of these shows. How the heck did you work that out, Alan?
Well, it was amazing because what had happened was the book, last November, I was lucky enough to win an award. It was called the Thurber Award for American Humor, and so as the best comic novel of the year. The awards presentation was here in New York at the Algonquin, which was really cool. Thurber, the Algonquin, the whole thing was really nice. One of the other nominees was Bill Sheft, who was Letterman's chief writer.
Mm-hmm.
David came to see Bill. We didn't know who the winner was going to be. Okay, so how they set it up was the three nominees got up, read from their books. We sat down, and then they announced the winner. None of us knew who it was going to be. My reading was that one from The Boxer. And I was able to, I had a clear shot at Letterman. You know, he was sitting in the back, and I saw that he was laughing and enjoying himself. And after I won, he was very, very complimentary about it. The next morning, I called my agent. I said, look, Letterman was at the awards last night. Call up the show, tell them I want to come on, and read what he already saw me read. So let's make last night the audition, and it went well.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what happened. Now, mind you, that was in November, and I didn't get on until July.
Yeah. What happened there?
God forbid I was on fire or something horrible was happening. I would have died. I would have been burned to a crisp.
Yeah.
But the fact is, with the holidays coming up in November, December, new movies and all of that stuff, you know, an author is somebody who is more or less, you can put them in any time.
You're available when they want you to be available.
Yeah, I live in New York, and I made that very clear to them, and I told them even if I would be in L.A., I'd get on the next plane. So it happened that they called, and they said July 13th. And what I didn't know until that morning of the show was that they were going to have a podium where I was to read from the book. So there were two sections they told me. That I'd sit at the couch and, you know, talk to David, and then there'd be a commercial. Then afterwards, I'd read from the book.
Mm-hmm.
That was frightening to me because I also had never seen that on TV before, except when I was around 4 years old. The romper room lady used to sit in a circle and read stories to these four-year-old kids.
Yes.
About the little train that could.
Right.
You know? But David could not have been nicer, couldn't have been more gracious and supportive, and I was real nervous until I was announced. And as I walked out, with each step going closer and closer to the couch, the nerves just sort of disappeared, and it was really fun. It was really fun. I have a book of short stories that Random House is publishing that's coming out next fall, and my hope would be to get back on that show and read one of the stories or part of one of the stories on that on the show again.
And if you're really lucky, you'll get back on this show.
Oh, you know something? That's okay, you saw through me. To hell with the Letterman show. I was using him to get to you.
Yeah.
God damn it. I should have been as transparent as that.
Dare to dream the big dreams, Alan. That's what I'm saying to you. That's my message today.
Yeah, well, you know something? I might not touch this guy, but I'm sure as hell going to jump up and reach for it.
There you go. Alan Zweibel's book is called The Other Shulman. It is about a stationery store owner in Fort Lee, New Jersey, named Shulman, who finds himself in a midlife crisis and decides to run in the New York City Marathon. Ever done that yourself?
I run three marathons, one in Chicago. The book is total autobiography, except for the stationery store part. Okay?
Really?
Yeah, very much so. And I've run the New York City Marathon twice. So I was very, very familiar with what the tribulations were for somebody who's a little older and a little heavier to actually try to run 26.2 miles.
Mm-hmm.
So that was easy to write about. And, yeah, as a matter of fact, the New York City Marathon is this week, and I'm registered to run, but I might pull out because I hurt my knee and do it next year. If you pull out within 48 hours, they let you roll over to the following year.
Oh, so, that's nice.
Yeah, yeah, so I'm sure all your listeners are going to be... really anxious to hear whether or not I ran.
Well, we were all going to be logging onto the computer with the computer chip tied to your shoelaces to check exactly what your finishing time was.
Yeah. Well, you might see me with my chip just sitting in my living room for the entire race. I think the smart money's on that.
I mentioned that the book takes place in Fort Lee, New Jersey, which those of us who remember the days when you were a writer for Saturday Night Live remember your good friend Gilda Radner doing Rosanna Dana, who often would get letters from a Mr. Richard Fader of Fort Lee, New Jersey.
Well, it's no coincidence. Fort Lee, New Jersey is right over the bridge from New York. It's go over the George Washington Bridge, and there it is. My brother-in-law, a guy named Richard Fader, lived there.
Wait a minute. Your brother-in-law's name is Richard Fader?
Yeah, that's him.
Aha! Uh-huh.
That was mine and Gilda's way of saying, keep your hands off my sister. It was very cryptic, mind you, but
uh-huh.
There was something very, very, very sneaky about how I did that. And so I wrote these letters from Richard Fader to Rosanna Dana as if he had, and they were silly, and they were long, and they were moronic is what they were. And she answered him in these long rants. When it came time to write this book, I didn't know where to place it. Once again, I went back to Fort Lee only because I was very familiar with the geography. I didn't want it to be... I could have made it Long Island, but I said, you know, I know the terrain here, and why not? And I knew exactly what the little shopping center looked like, the little strip mall where I wanted the stationery store to be.
Mm-hmm.
So I wrote what I knew. I just put a stationery store there, and there you go.
And you say it's autobiographical. Does that mean that at some point you've had a midlife crisis of your own?
You know, I didn't like to term it as such, but I guess, yeah, you know, there came a point in my career where a couple of TV shows that I had done didn't work out. A couple of movies didn't do that well. The kids were getting older. They were starting to leave the house, you know, at college and everything. Me and my wife looked at each other, and we both went, who are you? You
know? Yeah.
And, you know, so I was in a rut, and... I saw a sign, we were living in L.A. at the time, that said, you too can complete a marathon. And this sign was in a Ben & Jerry's on Vicente Boulevard, okay, in Brentwood.
Because if you're going to inspire people to run a long distance, get some ice cream first.
Get some ice cream, you know, load up on those fake carbs and everything, things that just will clog every artery you have. And I felt, gee, I had to get out of the house. I had to get out of myself. I had to clear my head. I needed a goal. I needed some sort of a mission. I just felt it was going to be therapeutic. So I joined a group where every Sunday we met to go into marathon training. And that's how it was for me. So the part where Shulman in the book trains to run a marathon, all very autobiographical. Yes, I changed names and things like that, but the circumstances that he lived in and under at that time were very similar to mine. Yeah, his was about a marriage and a stationery store. Mine was also a little bit about my home life and very much about the career at that particular time.
Now, when you're writing a book like this, having written for TV and written for movies as well, do you also think to yourself, oh, I know how what I'm going to do with this scene right here when I turn it into a screenplay and sell it as a movie?
What a great question. If you read the book, it's very, very filmic in the writing of it. There are a lot of pictures that are drawn in the way I describe things, and that was very much done with, hey, if this is going to become a movie, maybe this can convince a studio or a producer or anybody, hey, boy, this is a very visual attempt, you know. So I did have that in mind. When in doubt, I painted pictures with my words, yes.
And after winning the Thurber Prize from American Humor, did Hollywood come calling?
I'm not sure if it was called calling.
I'll take it back. Did your agent try to make the rounds and sell the thing?
My agent started returning my calls, and no, they the first round was, wow, it's really funny, but it's a little internal. It's very much what goes on in a man's mind when he's going through this. And but there are some people since the Letterman show, it's been like a rebirth of it in a way. So there are some people who have expressed interest, and you know, I'm, as they say, fielding offers and trying to see who I think would do the best job with it, you know.
Alan Zweibel's book is called The Other Shulman. Incidentally, he's going to be coming to St. Louis for an event for Gilda's Club. His longtime friendship with Gilda Radner led him to be involved in this wonderful group called Gilda's Club, which helps out people with cancer and their families, etc. So he'll be in St. Louis on November 14th. And you can go to gildasclubstl.org to find out more about that. And we'll come back and talk more in just a moment as the Paul Harris Show continues here on News Talk 1120 KMOX.
This is the Theme to Gary Show. The Theme to Gary Show. Gary called us up and asked if we would sing his theme song. We're almost halfway finished. How do you like it so far? How do you like the Theme to Gary Show? This is the Theme to Gary Show, the opening theme to Gary Show. This is the music that you hear as you watch the credits. We're almost to the part of where we start to pop off. Then we'll watch It's Gary Shandling Show.
The Turtles, or at least Flo and Eddie, doing the theme to the show, It's Gary Shandling Show.
Man.
One of the people who was behind that show, creator and producer, Alan Zweibel, is with me today. How did that happen? Do you remember?
Well, the song or the show or both?
Both.
Okay, what happened was I had left Saturday Night Live in 1980, and I was here in New York. And starting to get published, and I was writing plays that were getting produced, and I hadn't been near TV for a while. I got a phone call from my manager, a guy who named Bernie Brillstein, who also managed Gary Shandling. He told me that Gary was doing a special for Showtime, and they needed somebody to help with the script. I went out there. Gary and I became very friendly, and we both had, basically, as we got to talking, we both had ideas for the same show. I wanted to do one where a guy was married with two kids, which is what I was at the time, who spoke to camera, and he was a comedy writer. He had an idea for a show where he played himself, a comedian who was single, and he spoke to camera. So we just basically took both ideas and blended them into one, and it was it became It's Gary Shandling Show, and we did it on Showtime. And for me, it was like lightning striking twice again, because it was like Saturday Night Live, which was broke all these rules, you know, in terms of what variety shows were like. Here we came along and did that to the situation comedy. We just said, okay, how would everybody else do it? Okay, how are we going to do it? All right. And now when it came to the song, we knew that we needed a theme song. So literally what happened was Gary and I were in an elevator, and we were going down, and we were in L.A., and he said, you know, we should write a theme song about the theme song. I said, what do you mean? And he started humming and coming up with some of these words. I I it was a very easy beat to hitch onto, and I came up with a bunch of the words, and I swear by the time we got to the lobby, we had a theme song. And it was so much fun. It was like putting on the fourth grade play every week.
Yeah.
You know, we did 72 of them, and it was the first cable show that was ever nominated for an Emmy Award, because prior to them being eligible for Emmys, there was something called the ACE Award.
Mm-hmm.
And we had won a bunch of those, but this was the first one to be nominated for an Emmy, and boy, we had great fun doing it, you know.
It was a terrific show. I never missed it. And I was also happy that at one point Fox picked it up and started running some episodes, didn't they?
Well, yeah. What happened was Showtime, we calculated that maybe a dozen people were actually seeing the show.
Yeah.
On Showtime.
Right.
Fox had come along, this is the late 80s now, as a new fourth network. So what they did was, I think that they allowed, Showtime wanted like a window of every original show for 30 days. And after that, it would be repeated on Fox. And I think they piggybacked us with the Tracy Ullman show at
mm-hmm.
the time.
Yeah.
All right, so there was an hour of us and Tracy Ullman. So, and we jumped at the opportunity because we wanted more people to see the show. You know, because on Showtime, not everybody was wired for it at the time. And it was literally a cult hit, you know, because nobody was actually seeing it.
Yeah. And nowadays, of course, people... Oh, wait, I was going to say they can get it on DVD, but it's not on DVD.
No, it's not on
DVD. What is it with Shandling and his refusal to put stuff on DVD?
Well, you know something? My hope is that, you know, Larry Sanders just came out on DVD recently.
Yeah.
And my talks with Gary were as such where, you know, let's do Sanders first, and let's, you know, then look into it's Gary Shandling's show. So I owe him a phone call to find out, okay, let's go. You know, so, you know, because every, you know, I read The Onion a couple of months ago where they had a list of comedies that are not and should be on DVD. This is on every one of those lists. It's Gary Shandling's show.
Yeah, it absolutely deserves to be there. Alan Zweibel, the book is The Other Shulman. He got the Thurber Prize for American Humor last year. As you mentioned, he won a bunch of ACE Awards and Emmy Awards and a couple of WGA Awards. And we'll come back after a break and talk about his years with Gilda Radner on Saturday Night Live. It's the Paul Harris Show on News Talk 1120 KMOX. News Talk 1120 KMOX. I'm Paul Harris. Proud to have you along every afternoon from 2 until 6. Talking today with Alan Zweibel. His latest book is called The Other Shulman. Very funny novel. He has been writing funny stuff for a long, long time. That the theme from Curb Your Enthusiasm, which he has worked on. We already talked about it. It's Gary Shandling's show. He helped write 700 Sundays, the Tony Award-winning Billy Crystal Broadway show. He worked with Martin Short on his show. And... I guess first became famous for his work on the original years of Saturday Night Live. And I understand, maybe you can verify or debunk this story for me, Alan, that at the very first meeting you went to with the whole crew from SNL back in 75, that while everybody was pitching all sorts of stuff, you sat behind a potted plant and tried not to be seen.
Well, you know, look, you had to bring that up.
Is it true?
What had happened was, yeah, it was a dream come true to become a TV comedy writer, and here I was my first day, and I went upstairs, and we all met in Lorne's office, and I'm looking around, and there's Belushi, and there's Chevy, and there's Aykroyd, and Franken, and I'm going, oh my God, these guys are the funniest people in the world. And there's me, and I felt like a fraud. There's no way I can compete with these people who would, everything they said was funny, and they were acting out their ideas. And you know, it was basically just to break the ice and talk about the kind of things that we would have on this brand new show. So in the corner of Lorne Michaels' office was a potted plant, which I went behind, and then I squatted down just so not to be seen and not to be called on, so I wouldn't you know, embarrass myself in front of these people who were like from different planets. That's how good they were.
Mm-hmm.
So I did spend some time behind that plant when all of a sudden from the other side of the plant I heard a girl's voice go, "Can you help me be a parakeet?" And I didn't know what that meant. So I parted the leaves, and I looked through, and it was Gilda. She was talking to me. I said, "What?" She said, "Yeah, I think it would be really funny if I stood on a perch and sort of scrunched up my face and spoke like a parakeet. But I need a writer to help me to figure out what the parakeet could say, because I'm not a good parakeet writer. Are you a good parakeet writer? I had no idea what she was talking about, okay? But at least somebody was talking to me. I went, yeah, I'm a great parakeet writer. And then she said, we got to talking, and she said, what are you doing behind this plant? Why here? I said, I just mumbled something. She said, are you nervous? I said, well, you're a little. She says, is this your first TV show, Alan? I said, yeah. How do you know my name is Alan? And she said, you're the only one wearing a name tag. That's how awkward I was. So she said, listen, is there any room back there for another person? I went, yeah, why? And she said, well, I'm really nervous. It's my first TV show also. So she came behind the plant, and the two of us squatted down. We spent the meeting there getting to know each other.
Now, for those of us who remember the early days of SNL, Chevy Chase was the first breakout star from that show, but Belushi and Aykroyd were getting very well known quickly. And the three women on the show, Gilda, Lorraine, and Jane, at the beginning didn't have nearly enough to do, and so it took a while for them to have breakout characters. What was the first one for Gilda?
To my knowledge, if history serves me well, okay, it was Emily Letella, which was a little old lady who was based on a nanny that Gilda had growing up when her real mom got sick. And it was a little old lady who was slightly hard of hearing. So what she would do is she would mishear certain things. And we put it into, and it was a whole bunch of people that went into the creation of this character, myself included. But what would happen was Gilda would come on a Weekend Update and give an editorial reply to editorials that she heard wrong. Okay, so that she would go on and on and on. These long rants railing about editorials like saving Soviet jewelry, okay?
Right.
Or making Puerto Rico a stake instead of a state.
Mm-hmm. And she was against sax and violins on television.
Sax and violins. Then we started really running low on ideas. There was presidential erections. and I think the lowest we hit was endangered feces.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. That slipped in there also. But she would go on and on and on. She would be corrected, and she would say, oh, that's quite different, then look to the audience and say, never mind.
Mm-hmm.
To my knowledge, it was either that or Baba Wawa. And the reason I say, it was 1-2 or 2-1. And the reason I say that is they both occurred while Chevy was still doing Weekend Updates.
So right.
It was in his, and he was only there for a year and a couple of shows in the second year. So they were both in the first year.
Well, once you saw what she could do, besides getting you out from behind the potted plant, did you say to yourself, I am hitching my wagon to this one right here. I'm going to write for her. She's great. I have her voice inside of me. Was that?
Absolutely. That's exactly what happened. It was two souls who found each other, and we made each other laugh. And we were these two kids. She was new to New York, okay? She was like 28. I was 24. And I showed her New York City. She was from Detroit. She had been in Second City in Toronto, and New York scared her. I grew up on Long Island. My dad always had his place in New York. I was familiar with the city. And we just started hanging out together, a lot of dinners and a lot of parties, and we just sort of glommed on to each other. And we wrote a lot of things to each other, with each other, for her and for other people as well, because we just made each other laugh so much.
And that friendship lasted through the rest of her life, which you recounted so beautifully in Bunny Bunny, which was first a book and then a play. And I understand you're now doing for HBO?
Well, they bought the movie rights to it, so there's a screenplay, and let's see if it happens, But yeah, I mean, that chronicles this 14-year platonic friendship that we had. It was beautiful, and when Saturday Night Live ended and then she moved to the West Coast, I stayed in New York. I had gotten married, started having a family. She married Gene Wilder, and she was on the other side of the country. So we had the, this was before emails. This was even before fax machines. So it was phone calls, trying to keep this friendship going 3,000 miles away. And, every week became every other week, became every month, started waning until I went out to California and teamed up with Gary Shandling, and we did the pilot for It's Gary Shandling Show. That brought me to L.A., and Gilda and I found each other again, and this was around the time she got sick. So, you know, this was about 86, 87. We found each other again and rekindled our friendship. And Bunny Bunny takes us all the way through her last appearance on TV, which was on It's Gary Shandling Show, and then ultimately, unfortunately, through to the memorial, you know, the eulogy I gave at her memorial.
Until you came out with the book, I didn't know that anyone else did this Bunny Bunny thing that my wife has done, her little first of the month superstition. I had never heard of anybody doing that until I met my wife, and I never met anybody else who did that until you wrote the book. Had you?
Never. I never heard of it. She's the only person. Now, since then, other people have come and told me that they say rabbit, rabbit.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
You say rabbit, rabbit on the last day of the month. And then
oh, is
bunny,
that what it is?
Yeah, it's got to be the last thing. This is what my wife tells me. The last thing you say at the end of the month is rabbit, rabbit. And the first thing you say to begin the month is bunny, bunny.
So I just learned something from you. I thought rabbit, rabbit is what people said on the first day instead of bunny, bunny. Wow. So I never heard about it before or since, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Growing up on Long Island, we'd say rabbi, rabbi. But that's a whole different thing entirely. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
no, and she was very, very superstitious, and she said it to her dying day. You know, this was a real superstition that she had. And then the other people who I've since met who have said rabbit, rabbit, they also they believe in this. It's very, very interesting, and I don't know how it started.
It's very strange in my house because, you know, I'm very rational. I don't have any superstitions. I don't believe in any stuff like that, and I'm married to a woman who believes in this and does it every month and has for 24 years.
Wow.
So, I mean, 24 years that I've been with her, much longer than that in her entire life.
I understand, totally.
So anyway, all of this brings us to Alan coming to St. Louis in just a couple of weeks for an event for Gilda's Club. It's going to be November 14th at the Ritz. And talk a little bit about what Gilda's Club is.
Well, Gilda's Club was started about 10 years ago by a woman named Joanna Bull and Gene Wilder, Gilda's husband. And it's a wonderful, wonderful thing. Gilda's Clubs are support centers for cancer patients and their families. They're all over the country. They're sprouting out all over the place. And I must tell you, they are like godsends to people who are unfortunate enough, and sooner or later everybody gets hit one way or another, either ourselves or somebody we know, you know, and somebody that we love. And these are free clinics where people go. They have encounter groups, not only for the cancer patients who, you know, more or less commiserate and bond with other cancer patients, but with their loved ones who are healthy. They swap stories, and they have their own encounter groups as to how to deal with the emotions that you have when somebody you love is stricken with cancer. And I've been all over the country doing these kind of fundraisers, and each time I go into the Gilda's Club, and they all look the same. The rooms may be a little smaller or bigger depending upon the specific building, but they all have Noogie Land, which is for the kids, and they all have the Rosanna Dana room and all of that. And I believe, if I'm not mistaken, when I come out there on the 14th, it's a fundraiser for a Gilda's Club that isn't built yet. Is that correct?
Yes, it's just getting going here in St. Louis, and the event is going to be at the Ritz, and Alan is going to come and talk about its relationship with Gilda.
I'm going to be showing some tape of Gilda.
Oh, great.
From Saturday Night Live and from its Gary Shandling Show.
Terrific. Well, I hope it's a big fundraiser, and I hope it gets the cause going here in St. Louis as successfully as it has across the country. And in the meantime, we're putting up a link to the book, The Other Shulman, on both my website and KMOX.com, where if you use that link, a portion of the proceeds will go to help out St. Louis Children's Hospital.
Oh, that's nice. That's so great.
It's very, very nice to talk to you. We could go on all afternoon, but we'll have to do it some other time, Alan.
Oh, I'm looking forward to the next time. Hopefully, you'll be able to make it that night at the Ritz-Carlton for Gilda's Club. I'd love to meet you, and thanks for having me on your show.
Alan Zweibel here on the Paul Harris Show on News Talk 1120 KMOX.